Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servodidio, and I'm your host. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Remember, Insight into Healing airs Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Also, please tune in next Wednesday for our season finale of this year, and then we'll start again in September. Also, you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. If you have any show ideas, questions, or would like to be a guest, please send an email to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Well, tonight we have another incredible guest. With us we have Carolyn Wilson. She's the Health Program Coordinator of Ledge Light and GASP. And tonight we will be discussing substance abuse prevention and what us, the community, can do. Carolyn, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks, Alexa. Happy to be here.
Yes. You know, please tell my listeners a little bit about what you do and how you got started.
Sure. Well, I am what is called a community-based coalition coordinator. Say that 10 times fast. And what I do, Alexa, is I lead a group of like-minded individuals from a community. This particular instance is Groton, Connecticut. And what we do is we represent different sectors of the community, and we come together to work on the issue of substance abuse prevention. Now, community coalitions of all kinds exist, and they work on all different kinds of issues. We are grant-funded to address substance abuse prevention, primarily in adolescents. And I got into the field because I was a public health enthusiast. I studied public health in school, and I've always been interested in behavioral sciences and health promotion, basically just trying to figure out why people do the things that they do and whether or not we can do anything to help them. So essentially, it's a real natural fit for me that I became a health educator, and I run the GASP program.
So what do you find a lot that comes up as questions or topics when you're running these groups meetings?
So, you know, some of what we do is dictated by the information that we gather. So in the community coalition world, we have this thing called the Strategic Prevention Framework. And in that framework, the top of the list, that the first thing we like to look at is assessment. So we take a look at our community and we figure out, okay, what do we want to do? How do we prove that there's a problem? And what information can we gather about that problem to then help us figure out a plan for how to address it? So that's basically what we do in substance abuse prevention. We take a look at the local trends. We ask people through focus groups. We do key informant interviews. And like I said, surveys, we do surveys. And that's how we determine what we're going to work on. And we right now are very interested in preventing marijuana use with youth and also preventing prescription drug abuse with youth as well. We also look at underage drinking prevention, and we keep our eye on all the other trends like vaping and all those sorts of things. So we really do it all. But we have a couple of key areas of focus that we focus on.
Yes, and they're all so prevalent, you know, with the opiate abuse, the prescription drug abuse, the vaping, and the marijuana use. It seems that they're on the rise, and I'm not sure, you know, a lot of times if it's opportunity and being able to people get their hands on it, but then also sometimes media, you know, I know we spoke a while back about vaping. And I think so many times it's geared towards children or different types of flavors. And I think that also might have people think maybe it's not that dangerous. Maybe it's, you know, more of a candy or a sweet than a really serious, addiction or problem.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad that you brought that up, Alexa, because, you know, this is really in real time exactly the sorts of things that that I'm working on. Constantly taking a look at the trends, taking a look at the marketing of some of these products. So vaping kind of came out of nowhere. You know, it was introduced on the market as a way to help adults quit smoking. And then they figured, huh, you know, like other, you know, industry models, it makes a lot of sense to, you know, expand your customer base, right? That's how they make money. And it didn't take long before youth started becoming interested in the big clouds of smoke and the flavors and, you know, something that they thought might be cool or something that had a little bit of a stimulant effect. So it's not surprising that vaping sort of turned into the epidemic as it did. And it's certainly throwing prevention folks like me for a loop because we're trying to play catch up with all the things we're seeing and really try to educate youth and make sure they have the information that they need to make good choices, but also trying to, you know, create campaigns for how to confront vaping as a bad health choice and something that shouldn't be cool. So we have our hands full.
Yes. And it seems also that vaping is a lot easier for youth to obtain, to get their hands mm-hmm. on, than cigarettes, because, you know, cigarettes have become so tough and also so expensive that I would think
right.
most young people can't afford it. But it seems like this vape is so easier to get. And also, they can do it anywhere, and people really don't smell it, so they can get away with
right.
it.
Right. Yeah, definitely. So there's definitely some elements about how it can be concealed that's really attractive to kids. That certainly helps them get away with it. But, yeah, the cost, the price point, it's different. And the policies have also tried to play catch up. You know, tobacco, a lot of people, the prevention world and the medical world, spent a long time, you know, combating cigarettes in the tobacco industry. And, you know, we backed off as the rates started to go down from smoking. It's almost as though we felt like we didn't really have to talk about it anymore. And that created the perfect storm of a generation that really hadn't been talking about nicotine the way we used to talk about smoking. And they kind of forgot what a big deal it was and that it was addictive and that it's you know, so harmful to the teenage brain.
Yes. And, you know, I would think just like, you know, when people are smoking, there's secondhand smoke for those that, you know, are
mm-hmm.
close to them. And obviously now there's a
yeah.
lot of laws you can't smoke in restaurants, bars, trains. But it seems like there's
mm-hmm.
no laws for vaping. I've seen people
mm-hmm.
in restaurants take a vape out, take a couple of drags from it, and put it back in. I'm also wondering, is that also that secondhand vape or whatever those around them are getting, could that be very dangerous for those around?
Yeah, well, certainly it's not the most courteous thing to do. I think, you know, like we said, in the prevention world, we're playing catch up with how to educate people about this. But in the policy world, you know, smoke-free laws, smoke-free workplaces, things of that nature, they've had to revise their policies to include vaping and e-cigarettes and electronic nicotine delivery systems, whatever they might be called, you know, to make sure that they're addressing that. And, you know, we don't 100% know what's in the vapor. And, you know, it's not just water vapor, as people conveniently say, or, you know, people that are defending it. And, you know, as a courtesy, you know, certainly, you know, it's something that's probably not welcome. So it's interesting to see that unfold.
Yes. And I think if you look at the whole picture with tobacco, marijuana use, and vaping, I mean, you would just think anything that you're inhaling and it's in your lungs and you're breathing and it's not all natural, I could imagine
right.
how dangerous that could just be, just having to keep inhaling something on a continuous basis.
Yeah, so, you know, certainly that's part of the message when we talk about those things, is smoking anything is bad for you. However, you know, you have a whole industry that says, no, it's not that bad for you. You know, we see a lot of these comparisons. We see people pinning tobacco against against vaping or tobacco against marijuana, and it's this contest of what's safe and what's better for you and everything. And kids are listening, and they're getting confused. And so you know, it's our responsibility, you know, in my field of work to try and sort through some of that and make sure that the kids are getting the right information so they can make the right choice. And then also their parents, too, because some of this is going on right in front of their eyes. And, you know, the parents are really trying to figure everything out for themselves so they can help their kids. So it's a very interesting time for sure.
Yes. How are you feeling? Because I know in my practice, I come up a lot with, you know, marijuana use. And also now that there's questions of it being legalized, medical, recreation, youth, children, even adults are justifying using it just because of that. And it's almost frightening that they're deciding, saying, hey, you know, it's legal, I should try this, or I can do this now more on a regular basis.
Right, yeah, very, very interesting that you should say that, too. You know, with changing policies and all the debate that's been going on around it, you know, I keep saying this, kids are confused. They're getting all these mixed messages because they're hearing their parents, some parents tell them that they don't want them doing it. They're hearing their health teachers in school saying that they shouldn't do it. But then they're seeing this whole industry telling them that it's okay. They might be getting messages from their peers that it's okay. You know, their parents may or may not even know whether or not they're doing it. And, you know, then they're justifying the legality as whether or not, you know, they should do it. And at the end of the day, regardless of whether or not marijuana is legal or commercialized for adult use, that will always be 21 plus. So regardless of any sort of state laws that change, we have to remind students and teens that the age will be 21 for a reason. You know, it'll be the same as alcohol because, you know, it's just not safe. So that, you know, in the event of legalization, we have to pivot and not talk about its legality anymore. We have to stick to the health messages and the discussions.
Yes, because I'm reading more and more studies now, especially with young minds that are still developing, we're finding such negative long-term effects from marijuana use, which is frightening. And then, you know, you couple that with depression, anxiety, or really severe mental illness, it's a disaster.
Yeah, you know, Alexa, one of the most concerning elements of that, and you're 100% right, is, you know, with this confusion about whether or not it's medicine, I think the concept of marijuana being so harmful to mental health is getting sort of downplayed. And it takes, you know, brave researchers and advocates to come out and say, hey, wait a second, this is really a nightmare for mental health in most cases. Some of the higher potency marijuana concentrates that are coming out that, you know, are on the black market or might even be available in the medical field, they really aren't appropriate for long-term use, heavy use. I mean, some of these concentrates are, you know, they trigger paranoia, anxiety, panic attacks, hallucinations, and can leave people thinking that they need medical attention or that they're feeling very unsafe. So it's not just, you know, you hear the phrase, it's not your grandparents' marijuana anymore, and it's really not. I mean, the things that are occurring in the field and the products that are coming out are incredibly potent and, you know, are concerning at some of the effects, for sure.
And I think we're also seeing a rise in, you know, drug use, but also in mixing. You know, more and more I'm seeing on the news with marijuana, too, that people are overdosing because it's been mixed with fentanyl and other really other types of drugs, too, that a lot of times these people think they're just smoking marijuana, supposedly, and they think that's safe, and they're not realizing all these chemicals and other things that are in there. And I think it's you know, really, it wasn't safe to begin with, but now it's really not safe.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that advocates for legalization will be the first people to say that regulation of the industry and, you know, testing and everything is good for people, is good for society, because that won't happen as much. But, you know, what they don't say is that with legalization, even if it does come with that element of regulation, the black market doesn't go away, because they'll always be looking to undercut you know, whatever the market price is. So, you know, regardless of whether or not you can get it legally, there'll always be tainted supply, perhaps, people trying to make the most profit. You know, it's just kind of how it goes. I think, you know, people need to realize that, you know, drug sales, typically illegal drug sales, it's not the most moral industry. So profit's profit. And, you know, at the cost of what, you know, the people who, you know, taint the product, they really don't care. So, you know, you never know what you're getting. And that's even more reason to not use it at all.
Yes. And, you know, you hear about all these young people at these different parties bringing different prescription medications that aren't their own.
Oh, sure.
That they get in their parents' medicine cabinet or their grandparents' medicine cabinet and putting it in a bowl and people trying
right.
different things. And I think it's, you know, it's not innocent. I know they think, oh, maybe it'll just be fun night of being high or something. But I think really the effects and the consequences are lethal.
Right. So, you know, we spend a lot of time combating prescription drug misuse and abuse. And, you know, these farm parties, PHARM, that you refer to, it's a really real risk. You know, this whole concept of an element of surprise and not knowing what you're going to get could absolutely be fatal. You know, if it's not prescribed to you, there's no guarantee that it's even safe for you. And if you take something not as prescribed, you take two instead of one, or you, you know, crush it and ingest it versus, you know, taking it the way it's prescribed. Basically, anytime you go against the pharmacy label, you can put yourself at risk.
Yes. What can parents do to help, and also if they're concerned that their child might be, you know, vaping or using, or because I know so many times parents don't know what to say, or they don't think their
right.
child will tell them the truth.
Sure, you know, and in the prevention world, we're always encouraging that conversation to happen early and often. You know, and it doesn't have to be a conversation that goes like, if you ever do drugs, I'm going to kill you. Like, you're going to be grounded for life. Like, that's not the conversation to have. You know, you can keep it sort of positive and participate in the conversation. Like, hey, I just want you to know if there's anything you ever want to talk to me about, let me know if you have any questions. If you're ever in a situation that you don't feel comfortable in and you need some help and you need to call me, do that. I just want you to know where I stand on this topic. You know, I don't approve of vaping. And, you know, if you do vape, I just want you to know that you're going to lose your phone and you're not going to get the car for a week. Or, you know, set some sort of clear guidelines. Because kids, they need boundaries. They crave boundaries. And, you know, regardless of whether or not it seems like they're listening, when you set rules, they know your rules. So we always say, have the conversation early and often, communicate your expectations, and, you know, give them a little bit of room to breathe, but, you know, at the same time, you know, keep an eye on them.
Yes. I think it's also for parents to know. I know sometimes parents are nervous that they might put a thought in the child's head by bringing it up. And it's, believe me, unfortunately, these children, they see it every day in school. This is not something like, oh, I didn't even know what that was. Unfortunately,
right.
It's going on, and it's accessible to most people if they really look hard enough.
Absolutely, and you can probably attest to this as a therapist. You know, talking about mental health, or say for instance suicide, asking somebody if they've ever had thoughts of suicide doesn't necessarily make them want to go out and do it. Sometimes it's healthy for people to actually talk about things, and it doesn't put ideas in their head or anything like that. It's just normalizing the conversation and taking the stigma away, really. Letting them know it's okay if you have questions or concerns, or if you've made a mistake and you've done something you're not proud of, it's okay to bring it up. So we're definitely pro-communication in the prevention world. We think it's good to talk about things, especially those things that used to live in the shadows.
Yes, yes. It's very important having the communication and the education. When you have these coalition groups meeting,
mm-hmm.
are there just adults? Or do children and youth come? How do they go? How do they run?
Good question. So we, the ideal coalition would have people from all 12 sectors of the community, and you're probably wondering what those 12 sectors are. It's a little bit of everybody, including parents, including youth, including youth service providing organizations, police, school personnel, people in the substance abuse prevention world, media, the business world, the faith world, all these different people and important people from different segments of the community. It's really valuable to have everybody engaged. And yeah, we definitely have to have youth at the table. You know, there's this thing about tokenism, just, you know, using youth just to say that you're using youth, but to really, you know, include them in the conversations and not just talk down to them. It's really a key element of what we do. So it does certainly take a village, you know, as they say, and communities are known to be stronger because of coalitions coming together and working on any problem, whether it be substance abuse or something else.
Yes. Now, I would think most communities, most towns would have these coalitions. If someone doesn't have one in their town or community, how could they get one started? Who should they speak to? What would be the steps to do that?
Oh, excellent. Well, that's a good question. There are great resources online to help people with that. But the first thing you want to do is sort of pick your problem, you know, how do you know if there's a problem? And then finding other people in the community who feel the same. And usually what you do is you approach stakeholders and you ask them about it and see if there's any data. You know, we've got survey data. Sometimes it's done in the schools, just to use prevention as an example. You know, you can ask to see medical data, medical examiner data. You could see, you know, police records. You could see, you could see anything really. And that's kind of how you start framing the problem. You find community members who think the way you do, and you try and find some data to back it up. And there are resources through Community Anti-Drug Coalitions of America that can help start coalitions. You know, they've got a great guide for people looking to start coalitions, and that's called CADCA, and they've got a whole website people could go to.
Great. Now, is it the same, because I know when they have different groups in mental health, there's HIPAA,
mm-hmm.
there's, you know, confidentiality, they can't be broken,
yeah.
and everything that's said at the meeting, names, that
mm-hmm.
is kept in the meeting. I would wonder and think that some people might be a little hesitant just that they don't want to be labeled or they don't want to have any information coming out. Is it confidential? What could people expect?
Oh, good question. So we take a non-clinical approach in prevention. So when we do community-based stuff, we're in the practice of referring people to help when they need it. So, you know, if there is a specific person who needs assistance, or a group of people that need assistance, we're very quick to refer them to the professionals that can help them, where some of that stuff would apply. We keep things on a pretty, macro level. You know, when we discuss prevention, we try to take a look at environmental factors, you know, that can affect a large amount of people versus more individual factors, like what one person is doing or something that you might look at in the medical model. So we try to keep a broad view of community when we're doing our prevention work.
Great, great. And do you go to different schools or different centers? Because I would think this would be really important to
mm-hmm.
have, you know, not just have maybe one meeting a month, but to have maybe a weekly meeting or every other week. It would seem that there would be there an importance for it.
Yeah, certainly you really could. We do have our meetings monthly, but, you know, we do a lot of events in the community. We go to different groups and network. You know, just tonight I was at a community conversation event, where we had representatives from the school and, you know, local government and parents. And we had an intimate conversation about prevention in addition to, you know, one of our monthly meetings. So when we have a monthly meeting, you know, we've got some coalition business to take care of. You know, we have grant-funded initiatives that we need to report on, and we have a whole business aspect of that coalition meeting. Certainly, you know, you could have plenty to talk about week by week, but, you know, everyone's a volunteer except me. So I'm the staff person that keeps everything together. So I also want to be respectful of everyone's time and know that I'm a special interest. And at the end of the day, the schools, you know, they've got a million things they have to do. And all the other people that I get around the table, they're busy with whatever keeps them, you know, busy. So I'm always appreciative when they come forward and work with me. But, you know, it's certainly a popular topic, and there's a lot of enthusiasm around it.
Yes. And I think also it would be so great for different community groups, also for schools, different people in the community that wouldn't have the resources or wouldn't even know where to go if there's an issue. I think it's always you're planting those seeds. So if something does come up, they know who to contact you and say, hey, you know, I have a concern about this or about vaping or about that. You know, what's the next step? And I find that is so important to be able to know where to go if something comes up that you don't know how to handle.
Absolutely. And we try our best to be a resource and the authority on prevention, but we also, you know, very quickly also stay in our lane. And like I mentioned earlier, you know, refer to other professionals as needed and always know that, you know, we know prevention stuff, but we also defer to all the other professionals in their fields, and hopefully we can work together when it makes sense.
Yes. If a professional or an individual or a community group wanted to contact you, how could they find you?
So I work for Ledge Light Health District in New London, Connecticut, and we have a website, and you can find information about GASP there. And then also, we're very active on the social media channels. So we use Facebook, and we use Twitter, and we use Instagram to communicate with the you know, people in the community and to get our messages out and to spread information. So our handle is @Groton_prevents.
Wonderful. So I find so many times when people are having an issue or looking for something, you know, they Google or they put in all these different things. And sometimes on the Internet you can find information that might not be completely correct, and you have people self-diagnosing or on their own figuring something out. So I think it's great to have a resource where people can get facts, can get information, and know this is the real stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. There is no shortage of things that are untrue on the Internet. And I would say if anybody's ever looking for the best information about, say, for instance, drugs and alcohol, like we're talking today, you know, NIDA, the National Institute of Drug Abuse, is a great resource. So is SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Those are two, you know, government-run organizations that are science-based. You know, they use research as their guide. And you'll never see any falsehoods printed there. Usually, if you can find a .org or a .gov site, that's typically a better resource than a .com site for things that are research-based and factual.
Great. Great point. Thank you so much. Well, we're at the end of the show, and again, I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on and giving us so much education and tools for all of us to keep moving forward and help with this fight for substance abuse prevention.
Thank you so much, Alexa. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
Thank you. And everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. If you have any questions, remember, send an email to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Everyone, have a good night, and God bless.